The Precision Rifle Network podcast is brought to you by Securit Gun Storage Solutions for competitors, hunters, and operators. Let's get into this episode. All right, guys, welcome back to the Precision Rifle Network podcast. This is season 2, episode number 16. Before we get started, I have to point out our sponsors, Securit Gun Storage Solutions. You can look below any of the YouTube videos. There should be a link to go over there and check out what they have to offer. Running some sales right now. We've also got Coltac PRN10 for 10% off. MK Machining is PRN10 for 10% off. Axle Hearing Protection, PRN15 for 15% off. Over at Graybow Stocks, you've got PRN10 for 10% off. This list is getting long enough that I'm having trouble remembering everything. Links below all the videos to those sites with the coupon codes there so that you can save some money if you're already going to be purchasing something. So with that out of the way, let's get into this. All right, so the first thing on the list is probably the Guardian match. Maybe the whole episode will end up being about this Guardian match that I went to out in Colorado this last weekend. It was pretty fun, but I've got some thoughts about it. Just the match in general, like nothing about the Guardian organization. Like, let me just start by saying Guardian as an organization that puts on matches for a good cause to help support, foster care and adoptions and things like that. Like as a cause, it's an excellent cause. They donate money, from your match fees and the prize table tickets that you purchase when you go to a match, like all that money's, a portion of it goes back to the community in whichever the matches are held. They work with various different organizations to help, in those types of ministries. And I think that's an excellent reason to, support the Guardian. And I can't say enough good things about the Guardian as an organization. So I found out while I was there that Gary is kind of taking a break from the Guardian and call it a sabbatical, whatever you want to call it, just taking a break from leading the Guardian matches. And and Garrison Pratt kind of stepped in and was helping to lead this match. And Heidi and I forget the other guy's name that kind of took Gary's spot temporarily. I'm sorry if you're listening, sir, I forgot your name, but, Garrison was a solid dude, great leadership for the match in general. He builds rifles. I just wanted to point out, Follow Through Gunworks, I believe is the name of his company. And the top winners at the match, like first, second, third place, and a number of other people all were using his guns and or barrels. So, I mean, if nothing else, that speaks to the guy knowing what he's doing with that stuff. And so, I mean, he's an engineer by trade and he's got a lot of good thoughts on things. And I met him for the first time there and just, I appreciated him. So wanted to point that out. This Colorado, Precision Rifle Club, I'm not sure if it's like these guys were part of, they were all part of that club, but I don't know how many clubs there are in Colorado. I don't really know much more than these guys were all from Colorado. They typically put on matches there at Cameo, and they were kind of in charge of setting up the actual match for the Guardian this weekend, and all a bunch of good, hardworking, solid dudes. Just wanted to shout them out and say, good job, you guys, for like all the work that it probably was to set up all that steel and just deal with all the things and plan it out and all that. Number one, it made it easier on the Guardian people to just come in there and run a match there. And that's pretty sweet of you to donate your time and talents to that. And I really appreciate that. I did hear some things that I wanted to talk about. And I just heard some things from the competitors as I was ROing. I was ROing stage 3, which I'll talk about that in a little bit. But I don't know how many pro shooters were there. I recognized the names of people as good shooters, pro shooters in probably the top 5 to maybe top 10 of the people that finished there. And so to me that tells me that, probably the top 10 were the good pro shooters and the other, competitors that were there were just probably, there were a lot of good shooters, but there were just lesser known or just new to the sport maybe, or something like that. And I'm going to get into the percentage of people, like the percentage of impacts based on the total number of impacts available for the day and all those things. So just without beating around the bush, there were a lot of people that said this match was too hard. It just as it relates to the Guardian matches in general. Your Guardian matches are typically, not always, but typically held at fairly wide open square ranges. And the target sizes are slightly more generous usually. And you get help on the clock. Like, no matter whether you're a pro or a brand new shooter, you can get help. If you're missing a shot, people are spotting and they'll tell you, hey, you're just off the right edge, give it more wind, whatever. Like, that's totally encouraged and allowed because these matches are geared towards fun mainly and helping out new shooters and things like that. So when you've got 63 or 64 competitors like there were for this match, and the vast majority of them are new to intermediate shooters, it is my opinion, and you guys have heard me say it before, that the match should be built for those people, not for the top competitors. I think the problem that some match creators run into is that when they're out in the field setting up the match, they set it up, like unknowingly, they set it up based on their own personal skill level. So if you've got a really highly skilled shooter, they're going to look at something and they're going to go, well, I can do that. So let me change it up and make it slightly easier. Either that or they just leave it. They're just like, well, I can do that. So that's good for everybody. You know, they just assume that if they can do it, then most people can do it. And that's not necessarily the case. And they might kind of, you know, quote unquote, for lack of better terms, they might dumb it down a little bit to make it easier for, you know, in their mind, they're like, oh, I got to make it just a little bit easier, you know, and they leave it at that, not knowing that their little bit easier is still maybe too hard for the vast majority of shooters that are going to be there. Given the fact that Cameo as a shooting range is, you know, high desert, it's out in the mountains, you're shooting across valleys, you're shooting at weird angles, you know, the positions are all natural positions, which most people don't practice that. Most people practice prone. Most people practice off of, you know, flat man-made barricades that are hand-built. Natural terrain just provides a new dimension that most people are not ready to handle. Not to mention the winds and all the things. So I just heard a lot of people saying, man, I didn't think this match was going to be this hard. You know, I heard that a lot throughout the day, a lot, enough that it was like, okay, something is sticking out here. Like, you know, look at my stage in particular, which was stage 3, and I had these diamonds, 4 different diamonds, different distances, starting at like 500. Let's say, I don't remember the exact yardages, but this will be representative. You had one, the closest one, let's say it was at 500 yards, and then you had one up and right, literally up in elevation and also laterally right of the first target, because it's going up the side of a mountain, basically, at, let's say, 550. And then you kind of went up and left for the next one. And that one was, let's say, at maybe 600. And then the last one, let's say, was at 650, up and left again. These were originally white targets, right? So if you happen to get to my stage early on in the day, you were going to have a lot easier time finding those targets because not only were they painted white, they were also in the sunshine. So they just stood out. You could see them easily with the naked eye. I had to spend a significant amount of time talking people onto target all day long. And for something that is, you know, supposed to be kind of an easier, beginner-friendly match, that was a fairly advanced thing to have to do for these people. You know, I would say it, I would show it, and I would invariably have to constantly be reiterating to people where these targets were. And a lot of people failed because they couldn't find the targets, even after all of the explaining and the showing and all the things. So at this match, just looking at the scores and doing a little bit of math, the top 10 people on the list, saw the winner getting 90% of the impacts. Congratulations to Chris Way. He was the winner. He got 90% of all the impacts available on the day. And the 10th place guy got 60% of the available impacts. So between nine different places, basically 10 different places, you had a 30 to 40% swing in the number of impacts attained. To me, that is a solid indication that a match is not as easy as it should be, especially given the fact that there are a lot of beginners. And then you look at the rest of the field, 11th place down through, I don't know, there were like 63 or 64 shooters. The rest of the field was below 50% of the impacts on the day and significantly below 50% of the impacts on the day. So at the end of the day, you've got 60, let's call it 50. Well, if they had 64 people total, let's say you got 54 people. So even that 11th place guy who got 50% of the hits, like think about that, right? That's hit, miss, hit, miss, hit, miss all day long. And probably it wasn't like that. Probably it was like, you know, you might have gotten lucky and cleaned this one stage that was easier, but then you probably zeroed a couple of stages and, you know, got twos and threes on a stage or something. Like at the end of the day, you've got well over half, like the majority of all of the shooters that came to your match are not super happy. They're not having a ton of fun because they're just not getting enough impacts. Now, maybe I'm just speaking from my own personal, you know, opinions on things, and that's not really the way it was. But to me, when you've got those kinds of numbers happening, you've got a match that's a little too difficult, especially for beginners, especially for a guardian match, yada, yada. I don't know. All I'm trying to say there is not to like harp on or complain about the guys that were setting up the match. Like, I'm not doing that. I think those guys are great. I enjoyed hanging out with them. I had fun at the match. All those things. I respect their ability to, you know, to put on this thing and all the work they put in to hang up the targets and do all the things. Like, I'm not bad-mouthing them. I'm just trying to bring awareness to match directors to maybe change course a little bit. Like, let the highest levels of the PRS build their matches for the high-level competitors. And the rest of you guys as match directors, please start building your matches for the rest of the people that are not PRS pro shooters. The vast majority of people are not PRS pro shooters. They want to win, but more than that, their main goal is to go out. If they're spending this kind of money on something that they're supposed to be having fun doing, they want to have some stinking fun. And how do you have fun? You hit targets. Everybody wants to hit the target and hear the steel ring. That's it. This isn't complicated. So please build your matches for the new to intermediate field, the vast majority of people that are out there shooting your match. Build it for them, not the pros. Who cares if the pros clean the match? No one cares that. They just don't care. They'd be like, oh, well, he's a pro. Of course that's going to happen. Meanwhile, the rest of the guys had a blast because they got 70% impacts, 80% impacts on the day. You know what I mean? I don't know. To me, it's just not that difficult to make these things more fun, to start hearing people say, that match was the most fun I've ever had in my life. I got so many hits. It was super fun. As opposed to, wow, I must suck, or this match is extremely hard because I'm not hitting crap. This sucks. Must be something wrong with me. Must be something wrong with my gear. I don't like hearing that kind of stuff, man. We're supposed to be increasing the sport and showing people a good time. So there's that. But again, the Guardian is not to blame. And I'm not trying to blame anybody. I'm not trying to stir up anything or create any drama. I'm really just trying to point out that I think it could be done a little differently. And I think if you did it a little bit differently, more people would have fun. And I think your attendance would grow. And I think people talking about how much fun it is would increase as well. And that's a good thing, not a bad thing. Cameo as a range is amazing. It's my first time being out there. And that range in Colorado, oh my goodness, you guys, like, they dropped some serious money, the state of Colorado, on building that place up, and it is amazing. I don't even know where to start. The clubhouse is basically a big, you know, steel-sided building or whatever, but it's really nice. It's got a clubhouse and a pro shop and all kinds of places like classroom spaces and like an open warehouse-type space where we did the awards dinner, prize table, and registration and all the things. So many different, like pistol and rifle bays that you can rent out. I don't know, 30 or 40 different ones that are all rentable. You can go do your own thing, have a bay all to yourself. You know, for pistol, rifle, whatever. I didn't go see it, but I heard the shotgun, this like the skeet and trap lanes are immaculate, like perfection. From a long time shotgun shooter, I was talking to him and he said it's the nicest he's ever seen, and he's been shooting that stuff his whole life, so that says something. And they've got the long range area, the LRP, long range precision area, has its own clubhouse way up in the mountain. You'd have to drive almost like a mile away from the main gate and the main clubhouse up into the side of the hills before you get to the LRP. And then you can even drive a long ways further than that to get to a lot of where the stages are and stuff. Like when you're up shooting at the LRP, you can't hear any of the shots from down at the main clubhouse from the long range guns. That's how far away it is. And everything is shot like over the canyons. There's all kinds of like depressions and valleys and ridges and stuff that you're shooting in and around and over. So the winds are somewhat tricky. They can be anyway. For the most part, you're shooting up over the top of most of them. So, you know, if it were me, I would always start with the prevailing wind, whatever that is, as far as my wind call is concerned, and then tweak it based on the terrain a little bit. But the ranges, it was just amazing. I can't say enough good things about the quality of the range. You know, they've got all kinds of side-by-sides that you can rent out, check out to get up the hill and around at the range and all that kind of stuff. Like, I don't know how many side-by-sides are sitting there, guys, but you know, those things cost 15 to 20 grand and there's probably 40 of them sitting there. Drop some serious money on this place. So it is super nice and it's well cared for. And, you know, the group of guys that are there, that work there, they're good folks. They're doing a good thing. They're trying to, you know, maintain a really nice range that was entrusted to them. And for that, you know, I got to shout them out and say, hey, good job, you guys. You know, I think what you're doing is great. It's admirable, those kinds of things. But I will say that the vast majority of those guys that I saw are old men. I'm approaching 50. So I'd be careful when I talk like this, but you know, the word FUDs is thrown around a lot, and this range was no different from people who regularly go to that range. You know, I got told from the moment I walked on the property, man, look out for the red shirt FUDs, and those guys got that reputation for a reason. Like, people aren't just making up stuff to call people FUDs, I don't think. And I did experience the FUD the FUD guys coming up and, you know, there's like a group of us standing down at the end of one of the bays, and at the far other end of the bay, probably 25 yards away, there was one guy sighting in his rifle. And this was at like a 200 yard bay. And there's a group of us standing around 25 yards away, but technically on the firing line. And one of the FUD range officers made all of us guys that were standing over there put our safety glasses on. You know, it's stuff like that. It's like, come on, man. Like, not only are these shots impacting 200 yards downrange, there's no possible way for that, you know, the bullet after it hits and it comes apart, that a little piece of that is going to make it 200 yards back to us. And if the guy's rifle explodes in his face 25 yards away, there's very, very little chance that anything's going to come back to us 25 yards away. It's just rules for the sake of rules. And I don't do well with that. And, you know, you got if you're going up to the long range precision stuff, you get a babysitter. Like, they don't trust you to drive up the hill and shoot those targets. You literally get a range safety officer that has to go with you and basically just stand around and watch you shoot. On one hand, I understand it's a state level run place. It's, you know, a government facility kind of thing, and they got liability and yada, yada, yada. On the other hand, I'm not saying all of the long range crowd has it all dialed in and is ultimately safe. We know that's not true, but the vast majority of people, if you know how to hit a target at 800 yards away, you probably understand quite a bit about how to use a firearm and use it safely. So I don't know. It just seems a little over the top to have a babysitter hand holding you the entire time. I do want to dispel that myth from last year about Cameo that the range makes you sign some sort of a paper saying you won't have any, you know, over 10 round mags or any of that kind of crap. That is not a thing. It wasn't a thing last year either. Apparently it was a lie and a myth propagated by a few people that kind of got around and shouldn't have. It wasn't a thing last year. It's not a thing this year. That wasn't an issue. So just wanted to throw that out there. Here's a couple things that I saw while I was ROing my stage that I thought maybe would help you guys. I titled this Things People Need to Learn because I saw it enough and it just seems like such an obvious thing to me now, but maybe it's not. And so I want to say it. So the first thing that I noticed is the way that people hold their barricades bags prior to starting a stage. Now, you know, most people, you've got your rifle in one hand, maybe you insert your mag. So you got mag in, bolt back, you're ready to go. And then a lot of people just hold their barricade bag by the strap, just kind of hanging down. Well, what does that do if you hold it by the strap? It sends all the sand or the fill or whatever it is down to the bottom of the bag. And then when it comes time to put your bag actually on the barricade or the rock or whatever surface you're going on, you've got all your fill to one lop side. And I've seen a lot of people go to put a bag down on a barricade like that, and all of a sudden the bag falls off the barricade or whatever it is because all the sand or the fill was on one end of the bag and it was unbalanced. So the thing I want to just point out throughout to people is, like, get your bag positioned kind of in the way, in your hand, in the way that you think it's going to have to be laid down on whatever barricade it was. Now, for my particular stage, it was some natural rocks, some big boulders, and people could just pick one spot on the boulder and build their position from there. So in that sense, you're going to lay your bag on its side, most likely, unless you just happen to need extra height for your magazine. But for the most part, you're going to lay your bag on its side because you get the most surface area. So when I go up to a stage, I'm going to have that thing already kind of flattened out and balanced in my hand in the way that I want it on that barricade. And then I'm going to lay it down on the barricade, and it's not going to fall off because it's going to be balanced correctly from the start. It saves me from having to fart around with that. I don't know how many seconds extra, 5 seconds extra, but, you know, if you save yourself 5 seconds of messing around with a barricade bag on the front end of a stage, maybe you get your final shot off versus not getting it off at the end of your stage. I don't know. It just, you know, it could mean one extra point on the board if you just positioned your barricade bag correctly before starting the stage. So stop holding that barricade bag by the handle and letting all the fill run to the bottom. Like, get it positioned correctly before you start the stage and then lay it down in the way you want it from the get-go. It'll help you. So just thought I'd throw that out there. I saw a lot of people doing that incorrectly all the way through the day. Another thing I saw was that bipods were getting in the way. Like, people would just leave their bipods attached to the front of their rifles, but either through just flat out, like, ignorance, and by ignorance, I don't mean a negative. I just mean they don't know any better. Like, maybe because they just don't know any better, or they didn't think it through or whatever, They didn't realize that when they put their rifle down on basically a flat boulder, like a tabletop or something, almost like a tabletop, slight curvature and some uneven areas on it, but basically a tabletop, they didn't think about the fact that unless they're going to use their bipod up on the front, then the folded bipod is going to hit the rock. And so I saw so many people lay their barricade bag down, put the rifle down on it, and go, what the heck's going on? Oh, my bipod's in the way. And then they just, instead of fixing it, they just try to fight through it with the bipod making their rifle all unstable and wobbly and all those things. And then they're missing a lot of shots. And I'm like, man, if you're going to leave your bipod on there, use it. Otherwise, lose it. Use it or lose it. Like, I don't understand that. Like, if you're going to have a bipod on your rifle during the stage, then you, like, make sure you need it during the stage. Now, they did, in fact, need it for this stage because the second position they had to move to was a prone position. So the guys that cleaned the stage, the guys that cleaned my stage, like Chris Way and Lemon and Josh Lemon and Garrison Pratt, like those guys cleaned that stage. And I noticed that all of those guys, actually, Chris might have ran his just on his barricade bag from a further position back on the rock so he didn't need to worry about his bipod. But the other guys used their bipod. They used the bipod up front. They used their rear bag in the rear, and they were basically prone on that rock position. And then when they went down to the ground, they had their bipod already set up. It just saved them time. Whereas a lot of guys had their bipod stowed but still attached to the rifle, and then they couldn't get the right positioning on the barricade bag on top of the rock, and the bipod was getting in the way. Some people just took the bipod off and ditched it, like on the ground next to them. And then, when they moved to the second position in the prone, they had to reattach their bipod, and however long that takes, you know what I mean? And then they're timing out. And so it's just some things to think about, you know, like in that efficiency of movement, you know, in those operations. Like, take a minute to think about those things prior to the stage and make a game plan and have a backup plan, because you know your original game plan, as soon as that clock goes beep, something's going to happen or go wrong. Like, you can look at a natural position on top of a rock, and you can be like, yeah, I think I'm just going to be able to lay my barricade bag on there. My magazine's going to clear. I'm not going to have any issues with the bipod. But then as soon as you lay it down there, you're like, crap, not only is my magazine hitting the rock, my bipod's hitting the rock as well. So I got to get higher. Okay, well, I'll just fold my barricade bag in half and get it a little bit higher. Even though, I mean, it's your backup plan, yes, but you start stacking a barricade bag, like by folding it in half kind of or whatever, or standing it up the long way. There's less surface area, like a lot less surface area. The bag's not really designed to lay that way. And so you're just going to have an unstable shot. You know, let your backup plan be almost as good and stable as your initial plan. And think about those things ahead of time so that you can make it work. Sometimes fundamentals and just proper know-how can get you through positioning your equipment incorrectly. But I don't know. I just think put a little more thought into it ahead of time and it could help you. Another thing that that people need to learn is what wind does across canyons. And I am by no means an expert at that. I live in Missouri, so it's not very often that I actually get to shoot across canyons. But I guess a couple of things that I want you to think about. Number one is the prevailing winds in an area, if it's open enough over the top of the canyon, like if you're shooting from a ridge and the canyon drops down and away, and then maybe your target is up on the other side, you got to think about the fact that your bullet is technically up higher in the air, in the wind. Not only could the wind increase in speed because winds aloft are typically higher than winds along the ground. So not only might you have to correct for that, but there's nothing impeding the flow of the wind up there terrain-wise. And so the prevailing wind of the area is typically the best wind to go with, at least for an initial call. The other thing is that wind, as it goes uphill, compresses. And when wind compresses going uphill, it actually speeds up. So if you've got a quartering wind, let's say, going up this across a valley and then up a slope before it gets to where your target location is, rest assured that that wind at the target is going to be pushing your bullet up and the wind is going to be faster or increase. So I saw a lot of high misses on the farther targets. The difference between a 500-yard target and a 650, just 150 extra yards of distance in the targets, but it being further up the side of a mountain, people were missing high. And it just goes to show that, like, you just need to think about those things and maybe adjust for them, especially if mirage is super heavy. Like, if mirage is super heavy, I take a tenth off my dope right off the bat. And if I know that my wind is going to increase and potentially push my bullet high, or there's like some hills or ridges where wind is going to catch and come up off the top of these things that my bullet's going to fly over the top of, those thermals or those wind drafts up in the up direction is also going to push high. So I would maybe take another tenth off of that. So for that stage, for my stage, I would have probably taken 2/10 off of my dope right from the start just to see what it did. And I would make corrections on the fly based on that. A tenth for mirage and a tenth for just the angle wasn't quite so much, but a tenth for mirage and a tenth because of maybe the angle and maybe some of those thermals coming off of those hills going in the up direction. You know, just things that you learn along the way. So wanted to throw those out there. So at the Guardian, I don't know if you knew this or not, but the Guardian matches, they do the prize tables differently, actually in a really cool way that I really appreciate. And that is the first place, second place, third place, and so on, guys. They don't just automatically get to walk the prize table. It's actually done in ticket form. So ahead of time, you can purchase tickets, like raffle tickets. And you basically, I don't know if it's every dollar or if it's every $2 you get a ticket. But anyway, you get tickets, you write your name on it, or you put your shooter number on it, or whatever it is. And you can buy as many as you want. Like if a guy drops $1,000 in tickets, he's probably going to get his name called a lot during the raffle at the end. And so they just randomly draw their names or numbers or whatever, their tickets out of a big box at the end. And if your name gets called, you get to walk the prize table. Well, for being an RO, they gave me $100 worth of free raffle tickets. And my name got called. And I went up and I picked up a KGM suppressor certificate at 50% off. I actually got called twice. And the second time I went up there, there was still a KGM 50% cert on the table, and I almost grabbed it thinking, I wonder if they'll give me, you know, I went up twice, I've got two 50% tickets, maybe they'll give me 100% off of a suppressor. But I left that and picked up something significantly less valuable on the second time that I wanted to give to my son for hunting. Anyway, the KGM suppressor, I can't decide what I'm going to get. They've got such a good line of suppressors there that are really built for precision. And I think the R series is what we have to choose from. And I can't decide if I'm going to go with like a 30 cal extra long because I like it just being super quiet. And 30 cal means I could use it on 30 cal and everything lower. Or if I want to go with like a shorty, like a little 4-inch or 5-inch can that I would use for gas guns specifically. I can't decide what I want to do. But anyway, that's my experience at the Guardian out in Colorado, guys. I had a good time, really no complaints, just some things to point out and, you know, some shout outs to make for guys doing hard work. And my respect to the Guardian, of course, and all of you guys who put those on. My respect again to the Colorado club that actually set up the Course of Fire. My challenge to you guys, if you're listening, would be to consider your crowd that's showing up and build your matches for them and not for yourselves or for the pros. Cameo as a range is amazing. There are some FUDs there, so be aware of that. We talked about some things that, you know, maybe you can learn about positioning a barricade bag or calling winds across canyons or whatever it might be. And also my shout out again and thanks to KGM for Their generous donation of a 50% off certificate on the prize table, and I will be looking forward to getting that suppressor in like 4 years whenever the NFA approves it. Down with the NFA and down with the ATF. Can't stand these guys. Anyway, thank you guys for listening. Make sure you hit that follow button. Share the podcast with somebody else if you can. That would be a big help. Make sure to check out those sponsors, and we will catch you again in the next episode. Thanks, guys.